It is time to enter Entertaining Court with the one and only Richard Krause.
Order in the Entertainment Court. Let's get judgy.
The court is now in session. Oh,
excuse me, lady. You think I'd be used to her. But before you get robed and you throw that wig on, we have to mention to our listeners that Richard Krause is part of the incredible award-winning W5 team on CTV. And you have a piece on W5 airing tomorrow on CTV and CTV Go, Richard.
I know. It's 7 o'clock. I'm so excited. I take you to what they call Footstep Studio. It's the Foley Farm where Andy Malcolm, one of the masters of the craft of creating sounds for film and television, creates this magic. It's the only way I can describe it. He creates sounds that you think are just everyday sounds. So you see a movie and someone gets punched in the nose and you hear a bone breaking. Well, that's probably Andy with a little piece of pasta up against the microphone, breaking it at exactly the right second so that it creates the illusion that you're hearing something that the camera didn't originally pick up. It's a really, really fun story. And we have Academy Award winner Sarah Pauley, director Patricia Rosema, talking about Andy's work. And Sarah says, he's a wizard. Everyone knows and respects this guy in the business. And I think after people see this tomorrow night at 7 o'clock on W5 on CTV, they will too. It's a fun, fun story about this guy.
We are all looking forward to your W5 debut, Richard Krause.
Yahoo.
What a smart team picking up Richard Krause. And so we have producer Ben Harrison as my co-juror. We are making up your jury this Friday afternoon. And if you don't mind getting robed, we'll begin, Judge.
Well, the first case is about Agatha Christie. Now, a few weeks ago, we talked about Ian Fleming's books being altered by sensitivity readers. Now, Agatha Christie's novels are the latest to be reworked by people who want to take out anything that has any bad connotation in the present day. And so there's a number of her books that are being completely edited and reworked slightly. They don't change the plot. They don't change the story so much, but they definitely change the language in them. So my question for you is, are sensitivity readers rescuing older books from a well-deserved obscurity, or are they cutting and pasting a modern sensibility onto art?
I think, Richard, books are historical texts. Any piece of media from the moment that a book was published or a movie was made or a song recorded, those are going to be a part of the time that they were recorded in or written in. The only time I'm okay with something like this is if it's a kid's book. Like, let's say for Roald Dahl's sake, his books. Those are books that kids have read, and they're books that kids should read growing up, but have things that might need to be changed to make them more appropriate for today's audiences. That's okay, but when it comes to Agatha Christie, just leave her books alone.
Nah, man, it says Indian temper. Get it out of there. That's what I say, Richard. There's no harm in removing it. You don't know what was missing, and the next generation could do better.
Here's my verdict. Make no mistake, this isn't about protecting the delicate sensibilities of a new generation. This is about milking a cash cow. The Guinness Book of World Records lists Agatha Christie as the best-selling fiction writer of all time. Her novels, written between 1920 and 1976, have sold more than 2 billion copies and are artifacts of their time, and as such, their continued success or failure should be left at the hands of the audience and not sensitivity readers who likely weren't even alive when Christie was the best-selling author on the planet. Are there unfortunate turns of phrase? You bet. But at the very least, publishers should allow the original texts to exist side by side with the new censored versions of the books. It's a better option than burning old books, treating them as dangerous works that will pollute the minds of anyone who reads them. And that is my verdict.
Richard, what is the next case?
So watching live sports in person may be good to you. So there's a new study that suggests that if you're feeling dissatisfied and lonely, that if you grab some tickets and go see your favorite team and play their game, that you'll feel better. You'll get the dopamine rush that suggests that, you know, maybe things aren't so bad after all. So my question here expands this a little bit. And I just ask, do shared experiences, just generally speaking, make us all feel better?
Yes, 100%.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm already looking forward to going to Blue Jays games this summer, sitting up there with my friends, cheering on the team. When you're part of that moment, when you see something happen and everybody gets up and cheers and yells, it feels amazing. I 100% agree.
I have no doubt that this study is true because I've experienced something similar many times. I'm not a sports fan, but I do go to the movies, live theater, and concerts. And every time I leave feeling better than when I went in. The reason? The ancient practice of sharing entertainment with a large group of strangers. That's why it's a primal thing, hardwired into our DNA that dates back to when groups of cave dwellers would sit around fires and tell stories, through to the Globe Theater, vaudeville, the talkies, and right up to today's IMAX and AUX screenings. People have gathered to be entertained since there were tales to be told, and because of that, there is no better way to enjoy the storytelling experience than surrounded by strangers who are laughing, crying, gasping, whatever, in response to a shared event. No matter how large your TV or comfortable your sofa, home viewing misses the magical element of community. And these days, we need as much of that as we can get. In the theater, you're getting the sound, the picture that the director intended, and that's all right by me. Also, in the movie theater, novelist Angela Carter said that when you're watching a movie in the theater, she likened it to dreaming the same dream in unison with an audience, and that for me always makes me feel good, and that is my verdict.
What's our next case, Judge?
Does Matt Damon owe you money? On October 28th, 2021, the company Crypto.com premiered an ad starring Matt Damon. It appeared during NFL games. It drew a lot of attention for Damon's suggestion that only cowards would fail to buy cryptocurrency. And if you jumped in with both feet, well, you'd be demonstrating courage comparable to that of astronauts and everybody else. Unfortunately, though, then there was a huge downturn and a lot of people lost money. Do you think then that Matt Damon, by lending his name to this, owes those people money?
He doesn't owe me money for crypto. He might owe me money for the last couple of movies he's made. I'll tell you that. No, look, I miss the days when celebrities could just kind of be dumb. They could make ads for things, endorse things, and there wasn't that kind of blowback that we're seeing. I mean, all artists are going to be shilling for one property or another. Spike Lee made an ad for a crypto company. I think he's one of the best directors of all time. What does he know about the crypto business? I don't know. I don't care. I'm fine with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think Matt Damon owes us money in this scenario either, but I can see why some would believe so, Judge.
He owes you nothing. Becoming a spokesman for cryptocurrency is one of the classic seemed like a good idea at the time ideas that must come through celebrities' emails every day and in retrospect would have been one to hit delete on. But he didn't go in with the idea of hosing you and didn't make any money off the endorsement. It was an ill-advised move, one that will likely cost him some credibility and endorsement opportunities in future, but the onus is on you. Get-rich schemes are usually just that. They're schemes. Fall for it, and that's your problem, not Matt Damon's. And that is my verdict.
Appreciate you, Judge. Thank you so much.
Well, thanks for having me.
Wishing you a very happy weekend and reminding everyone to tune in to W5 tomorrow at 7 p.m. on CTV and CTV Go to catch Richard's W5 story on Andy Malcolm and Foley in the movies. Foley is the sounds that you make. Just kind of like ASMR.
Yeah, the rain sounds, gunshots.
We were talking about ASMR earlier, Richard.
Well, yeah, the thing that makes the Foley so cool is the way that it's made. I think that you'll be very surprised at how a lot of these sounds are actually created, because it is not at all what you think. And when I show you in the piece, for instance, hundreds of pairs of shoes that he has, or books that are in some cases hundreds of years old, because he says, old paper sounds different than new paper. So I have to have it all. It's really incredible.
All right. Looking forward to it. Thank you so much. Have a great weekend, Richard.
Thank you. You too.
Richard Krause joining us live here. Ben Harrison as a co-juror.
Thank you.